What have you got?
Jameson, Caskmates and Tonic.
Lovely. Let's have a chat.
The Jameson Caskmates and Tonic Social Serve Series on Off the Ball.
One of the most intimidating things was playing against Mick Fitzgibbon. Because he was an absolute hero of mine watching him playing for Ireland at the time, because he was a standout kind of player. And
I remember playing actually one of my first matches with Shannon. It was a friendly in Dublin, maybe 94, 95. And it was a friendly before one of the internationals on Saturday. We played early morning against, I think it was Monkstown, and it was a kind of an annual match that would happen. Yeah. And even though it was a friendly, it got a little bit spicy at times, and there was one big abrasive number eight who was doing a little bit of bullying on me. I was quite nervous, and I was tall, skinny, young lad, not very strong at that age. And I remember he hit me late tackle, you know, was doing a bit of pushing and shoving, trying to intimidate me. And I remember the next time he carried a ball, Mick Fitzgibbon was renowned for his tackling. You didn't want to run straight at him, and he just cut your man in two, and there was an eerie silence, like everyone went right.
Well, that was definitely the case in those times. The older players looked after the younger players. We were the very same with me. Like, a lot of times I didn't even know what was going on around me. I was just Steve Jameson would have been one of the main heads. Kevin Potts.
Yeah, hard men.
Yeah. Like, these guys just looked after me incredibly well.
Going on playing, there was a great rivalry between Shannon and St. Mary's, and we had that success for a number of years. And then I remember you beat us in 2000.
That was the year actually that Mary's won. We won the AAL.
And that was a bit of a change in our regard.
Yeah.
And
we had a completely packed team.
Victor,
Dennis,
incredible players, and all Leinster representatives.
Yeah, Leinster and Ireland. Yeah,
and we. That rivalry kind of was starting to, you know, there was a fair bit of rivalry, because we were all playing against each other now for Leinster and Munster as well. Yeah. And then we were still very passionate about our clubs, weren't we?
Yeah, we were passionate about the clubs. And I'd been away in London and I'd just come back. And it was, for me, it was a real opportunity to be back with Mary's. And I really enjoyed playing all the matches. But I don't think I realised it. But that was to be the last year that we would play in the clubs. Certainly that I would play for Mary's.
Celtic League came in and it changed.
League came in, and suddenly Munster became this overriding and a powerful team, and Leinster the same.
And did you
the
find
clubs then? Clubs then kind of, or certainly the focus on the clubs diminished. So many of our Leinster-Munster rivalries seemed to really spearhead all the that kind of, you know, the success. Like, I can remember the first time we went to Lansdowne Road, we had, I think it was about 10,000 or 15,000. But I can remember one of the last games in Lansdowne Road. I think it was actually against Ulster, but there was Munster was previous. We filled the place. You know, this was before it was the old Lansdowne Road, so it would have been, I'm not sure when it was, 2003 maybe, before it was knocked down. And the stadium was full, and it was just wherever it had come from. Now, I can remember we moved from Donnybrook to Lansdowne Road, and we took the chance we'd do this. And over a period of 3 years or 4 years, suddenly the crowd started coming. And it was my favourite game of the year. You know, that home match, Leinster Munster, but we could never then go down and replicate our performance down in Thomond Park. And a lot of the times, I don't know why you do it, you send us down to Musgrave.
Yeah.
What was the reasons behind that?
Like, to be fair, we had the issue of being split.
Yeah.
Very passionate people in Cork, passionate people in Limerick. And maybe that was probably, both were, they were kind of trying to spread the games out, and trying to keep both sides happy that Cork got big games as well. Because I remember playing a lot of European games in Cork, and I loved playing in Musgrave Park. Thomond Park was a little bit different, obviously. It had probably a little bit more history and kind of associated with it. And that sounds disrespectful to Cork, because Munster beat Australia in Cork. Yeah. There's many great games down in Musgrave. So,
I was from
Tipperary, so I didn't really mind. I wasn't like this Limerick diehard. I was a Tipperary person.
But we could never win in Musgrave Park. Yeah, and we always thought, they're sending us down here because we can't. So we really focus on, we have to win. Yeah. Then we really focus. It was one of our main targets every year, was to win that match in Musgrave Park. And eventually, I remember the rain was coming, teeming down in Cork, and I'm not sure if you were playing yourself, but Ollie LaRue was playing for us.
That was 2000.
It was way, down. Like, it was a long time, and we finally won that match. And it was one. My favorite wins.
Some of the
matches we've played against each other. That for me was one of the key ones, because it was such a dominant performance, or we felt, from us.
I don't remember it, man.
Yeah, funny that, funny that. But it's funny what you remember, isn't it?
It is. The Celtic League final, that was one that kind of sticks out as well. And I felt that we kind of had the foot on the throat there at that period.
And Eric Miller gets sent off.
Yeah, but I mean, just in general, that we this was our chance to maybe push on a bit more and psychologically get one over you as well, because we were, you know, even though there were kind of tit for tat matches where you won in Dublin, but we were getting more wins in Dublin than you were getting down in Limerick or Cork.
Find it at all. Yeah.
And I thought that was a turning point for you.
My God, Claw nearly kicked the head clean off me, and he knocked it through the posts at one stage. But
I remember he stamped on Paul Wally, and Wally was back from an ankle injury. And Wally laughed up because his ankle wasn't great around that time. And I remember he looked up at Claw and started laughing and said, "You got the wrong ankle." But I don't think Claw had the intelligence to figure out that which ankle it was he was trying to go for.
I know. But, Claw was demented that day.
Yeah, that one was, and look, it was, you kind of, I felt in that game we were fairly comfortable and in control. Yeah. And then suddenly
the boys at the back line,
cut us apart, two tries, and it just changed everything. And then we're chasing and panicking, and that was a tough one to take. But look, that I felt then that the rivalry was starting to.
Yeah.
We all played for Ireland with each other, and you know, the club thing probably kept that little bit of spite, if you like, or a little bit of bitterness away from maybe Leinster Munster games, even though they were hard. Yeah. But up to that point, it was a bit of a turning point. I think we won an Interpro in Donnybrook in 99. That's one that kind of would stick out for me. And I remember that was incredibly satisfying, that one. Because he'd beaten us in Limerick
earlier that season.
Our Interpros didn't go great, but we won that one. So it wasn't your fault, because you weren't playing in that one.
Yeah, I couldn't take the blame for that one. Ireland itself was a different entity to Leinster and Munster. And I think when you walked in the door to Ireland, you had to put down your jersey. You'd be the Munster or Leinster jersey.
Yeah.
You had to put that aside and take on the green jersey and get on with whoever it was.
But you didn't have that bitterness. Were you a bit soft, like, in the head?
It did grow.
After
06 then,
as
I was
the
done.
Years went on.
I was done. Yeah.
When Raj slipped by you, I'd say, pressed the rewind button there and said, grab him by the back of the neck and throw him into the crowd. But it grew, but like that, I suppose that was the competitive nature of sport.
But that's what it needs. The only way you build real rivalry is through kind of hurt and loss. And there's got to be a reason why you dislike someone. For me, maybe it took a little bit longer than most. And I had to, like, for me, it took...
It's not
that
dislike
loss
for the person. It's dislike for the jersey they're wearing and getting beaten.
Like all those, I think those people that were, the crowd that went in 06 to that match also realised that were hurt because they were done one by the Munster crowd. The Munster crowd were there in much greater numbers, were emblazoned in their red jerseys. And for me, that was a real moment where Leinster went
needed
like,
psychological change,
either,
maybe. The
way we either like,
accept this as
we're second best, or you know, we stand up and be counted. And
because he's incredible players, and genuinely, this may sound insulting, but we felt that even though you'd beaten us in matches and you were well capable, we always had that fear that if you let Leinster play, their backs will just cut us apart. But if we can get inside their heads and be intimidating and kind of bullish, if you like, a lot of what good teams do, and we were kind of referencing what New Zealand do. They're an incredible team and so dominant. Yeah. They bully. So that psychological change, we noticed that. And it sounds like maybe that there wasn't a bitterness or rivalry before we played, because I remember going to see Munster, Leinster, and there'd be not many at the games, but there was a real bite to those games. So we're not being disrespectful to people who played before
us. Tough.
But I think with the way professionalism went, it probably took time for it to... Nobody wanted to lose, for sure, but I think that rivalry started to grow a bit more.
But it certainly started from me as a person. It ate me up for those few years. Yeah.
Onwards, yeah.
And it became more difficult for me to be involved with Ireland almost.
We're gone. We're done and dusted. What's the rivalry like now, do you think? Because people have spoken
I think it's unfair to say that just because a player moves to a club that is diluted because he's not true red. And it seems to be only one way, but I draw you back to the time when Stephen Keogh and Trev Hogan came to us.
Yeah.
They completely bought in to what we were about.
Sean Cronin. He went Connacht, Leinster.
This happens. Munster is an entity of people who are playing down there, and as long as there's a good heart of Munster players, people will buy into that culture and will be part of it and will do anything. You bet you Joey Carberry would do anything for that Munster jersey now.
Yeah.
And I think to suggest that it's diluted is wrong, you know. I think he will learn and buy into the culture and maybe build up his own heart.
People often ask me about the rivalry now as opposed to then when we were there. And I try and explain it that it was a journey that had a lot of bumps and changes along the way with professionalism. And then maybe our bit of success before years in Europe, and then ye clawing it back and accelerating on and playing with Ireland for so long. Some of the guys now, genuinely, they're nearly playing with Ireland before they actually play against each other provincially.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's Team Ireland now, and I think you can see the benefits of that.
Yeah.
That's not being disrespectful to the provinces, because I still see incredible passion. But I think a lot of them get on more and they don't probably have as much baggage that we had right back over the years.
Yeah.
Going right back to Mary Shannon, Munster, Leinster, and then fighting for Irish places and probably kicking and fighting for Ireland.
You can bet Dan Levy has no love for Munster.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it just needs a few guys like that to really drag the rest of the...
But the discipline is incredible, like, now, with siding commissioners and giving away penalties and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's no kind of rough and tumble.
Yeah, there's no gouging or that kind of stuff, you know.
Or stamping on fellas. Like, you weren't bad at that yourself, in fairness. I still have a few marks in the back of my calves for you, from you. But it has changed, though, hasn't it?
Well, that's
are they a bit
we expect that's
now,
for the best. We're saying that's for the best, aren't we?
I think so. Well, we see it with Ireland. So what's your take on the current Irish setup and the success in the last number of years?
Well,
and the suggestion maybe by some that there's a softness about performance now, and because I'm really intrigued about that mental strength that this group have now. I think they're incredibly robust.
Yeah,
and we're number two in the world. We just beat number one.
Yeah,
it's just been some evolution, hasn't
it? Yeah. Well, you look at Munster now. Munster don't lose to many teams. Leinster don't lose to many teams. So you've got two of the strongest European teams coming together. And you've also got Ulster who are rebuilding, and Connacht who are coming. So you've got four of the strongest teams in Europe coming together and being coached by arguably the best coach in Europe, if not the world. And what they are doing at the moment from a rugby perspective is not champagne rugby, but it's something, it's just absolutely, it's as close to perfection in terms of rugby, you know. And I know that New Zealand match wasn't perfect. Like, I would look at the mauls and go, like, they messed up a few mauls, messed up a few opportunities, but, like, you know, it's a serious performance, and they outplayed that New Zealand side in terms of intelligence, in terms of how they got the ball from A to B, how they got gain lines. Like, New Zealand's game hasn't changed that much. They do the simple things really well, and they pass to each other, like just trying to make space, But we were creating all these different wrinkles and finding soft shoulders in really tight spaces and really challenging ourselves to find holes. And the work that the guys did in defence was just incredible. Because obviously you're going to play against New Zealand, they are going to work you and work you and work you. And they stood up to that. And to, anyone to say that the performances aren't great, and even the Argentina performance, okay, they from an attacking platform, they messed up a good bit.
I think their minds were on the game a little bit.
They were probably shackled. They're probably shackled as well. They didn't want to let too much out of the bag, but they still got over the line against. And like, how many times you play against Argentina, and had an easy run?
Do you remember the time I saved Irish rugby in 2003?
I do remember. And then you fecked off. And then you fecked off.
Right, 23 years in. You from professional, when rugby went professional, you made your debut in 97, the All Blacks beat you 63-15, I think. That was your debut. I remember being at that game and going, Jesus, like, Mal, you actually played well in the game.
I took Robin Brooke out in the very first kickoff. That was about the best thing I did.
23 years on, we're now beating them for the second time in 3 years. And we're number two in the world. It's incredible.
You couldn't have seen that coming from where we were.
But it's credit to what's happened here with the game.
But it's been small steps. Like, people are saying, oh, that win against New Zealand, it's not that great of an Irish sporting event. But they've got to look at it from where it started and the steps that Ireland have taken. And now we played our part. And we were part of that.
Are you saying they couldn't have done it without you, Mal? How
many times did I say that?
You say that a lot. They couldn't have done it without you. That was a Frankie statement as well. Last thing before we go, looking back on our careers, the ups and downs, the good stuff, can they deal with that expectation and go to a World Cup next year and do the unthinkable?
Yeah.
We never got past the quarterfinal.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the old adage, like, it's game at a time, you know. And for this team, they won't really look. I know, like, you'll say we want to get on that World Cup squad. That'll be the first thing that these guys will think of. But they're going back now and they're thinking of Bath and they're thinking of, I don't know who Munster are playing.
Munster play Cass back.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking of now. Like, for us as pundits and media and supporters, we're all thinking, oh, geez, we're going to win the World Cup. But for them, they don't look at it.
I don't think Joe or the players will look like that, because it's on to the next thing.
The next thing, and the Six Nations, and it'll be...
But that's the nature of professional sport nowadays, Mal. Like, back in our day, we'd have a few pints, maybe do the Sunday.
We might think
about the match on Wednesday or Thursday, and then you've thrown the boots again, dust off the cobwebs. But
you never... It's such a long season, and the amount of injuries that guys take, sure, you'd be mad thinking... I'm going to be lifting the. How am I going to lift that trophy? How heavy is it? You know, you're not going to think like that. You know, you think it game by game, and you know, it's up to the media to create the hype. You know.
All right, Mal. We've been reminiscing for a while, going back over some old war stories, good days, bad days for both of us.
Yeah.
But we've had fun. We're out the other side now, so I hope you enjoyed your Jameson Castmates and tonic.
Sure did.
Lovely. Good to see you.
Thanks, Quinny.
We'll catch
good
up.
Good chat, man.
The Jameson Castmates and Tonics Social Serve Series on Off the Ball.